Shop the Sherwin-Williams Spring Sale and get 35% off paints and stains March 13th through the 23rd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Today on The Grave Talks, Navigating the Paranormal, a conversation with author Alan Cornelison. "40 years in the paranormal will change the way you see the unknown." For Alan Cornelison, what began as a deeply personal experience inside his own family became a lifelong journey into investigations across the Midwest and beyond. But after decades in the field, the stories aren't what compelled him to write his book. The responsibility is. In Navigating the Paranormal, he lays out what he believes many investigators overlook: the ethical weight of stepping into someone's home, labeling a location haunted, and influencing how families interpret grief, fear, and unexplained events. This isn't about thrill-seeking, it's about discernment, credibility, and knowing when a case requires more than cameras and curiosity. We talk about the lessons learned over four decades, the dangers, the boundaries, and what responsible paranormal investigation truly looks like. Today on The Grave Talks, Navigating the Paranormal, a conversation with author Alan Cornelison. Well, Alan, thanks so much for taking the time to talk about your latest book, and that's called Navigating the Paranormal. I appreciate your time tonight.
Not a problem.
Now, you have been a paranormal investigator for a long time, and by long time, for 40 years?
44 now.
44 years.
In fact, it's 44 this month.
You know, it's interesting because in the book, at one point, you made me think about something about how when you started paranormal investigation, how much it's changed to where we're at today as far as technology and the advances in paranormal investigating.
Oh, my God. I didn't have anything for technology back in the day. I know you haven't read my first book. It explains in there how I got into the paranormal. But I didn't have anything to rely on. I didn't have this thing called the internet. There wasn't books to speak of, except for, you know, books about maybe ghosts and some you know, pictures of some ghostly apparition sitting on a tombstone. You probably remember that. Mm-hmm. It's an old picture of this lady sitting on a tombstone. It's just books about, you know, theories and stuff of ghosts. And, of course, the Warrens. Back in the 80s, the Warrens were really big. I didn't know who they were, but I knew they. I read a couple articles, and I used what information I had to investigate. And I didn't have any equipment. I had a tape recorder the size of a small suitcase. It was a reel-to-reel. I had a Brownie camera. It was the kind you had to look to the top.
Oh, yeah.
and everything was upside down. And of course, that was really expensive, taking that to Photomat. And then, of course, then came the Polaroids. And that's what I had outside of a compass. I read some things about you could use a compass to pick up on these things called apparitions using electrical magnetic interruption that would affect a compass. But you had to sit there and look at it all night.
True. You couldn't really go anywhere. Somebody had to be watching the compass.
Exactly. So I think I was the first one to actually invent the first K2 or millimeter. Let me explain. My daughter had gotten this, it was a gift from somebody, and had all them little styrofoam peanuts in it. If you ever got those things on you, you know how hard it is to get styrofoam
off.
Yeah,
they just kind of stick to you.
It clings everything. And I remembered reading an article about somebody saying, well, these things were made up of some kind of energy, made of static charge or something. And it clicked with me. I thought, I wonder if you could use these peanuts to detect a ghost. And so at some point during my very early years, somebody had made arrangements. They'd heard that I was looking for ghosts. So I had alternative reasons. And of course, it's in the book what my reasons were. But I went to this person's house, this couple, and they said, yeah, there's this dark shadow figure going up down the hallway. And we know it's there, but we've never really laid eyes on it. But it's scaring my wife. And I said, well, we'll figure it out. You know, I mean, maybe it's a shadow. Maybe it's some headlights or something outside. And so I took these little peanuts, as I would call them, and laid them out like rows of corn, about 4 foot long, about 6 inches apart. And I had to take a little washcloth that was dampened.
I was going to say that would have been hard to do that, actually.
Not if you wet your hands.
Yeah,
a little
that
bit.
Makes sense.
And so I would lay them out like I was planting like seeds on the floor, and it was a wooden floor. So every now and then, I just get up after visiting with these folks, and I would take my Polaroid camera. I take a picture of the hallway, and I don't know what time it was. You know, I wasn't keeping track. I mean, back then, you know, who thought that, you know, the paranormal would explode like it has in the past 20 or so, you know, 25 years or so. I didn't write anything down. I just was there to help somebody. And it was early. I mean, early, late, whatever you want to call it, in the morning. I peeked in this hallway, and I had a flashlight that had the big D-cell batteries in it. I mean, I didn't have none of these little LED flashlights. And every one of those things was scattered around like a breeze went down the hall, like somebody turned a fan on. They were everywhere, and something had to have moved those. I looked. There was no ducts. There was no windows. There was no doorways in this hallway. There was nothing that could have contributed to those things being scattered like they were, except if something static went down the hallway.
That's interesting. So, I would have never thought about using those to detect anything. But the way you just explained that makes perfect sense.
That's the way I did it. I mean, you had to make stuff up, and it either worked or it didn't. No batteries were included. It was just one of them things.
What was it that got you interested in the paranormal 44 years ago?
It's in the book, but I'll reveal it to you. My daughter.
Yeah.
We had lost her mother in a fire and lost everything.
Oh,
including her. We were living in a piece of crap mobile home that was put up to us by the Red Cross, and a lot of furniture donated and this and that. And it was late one night, not late. It was average night, 8 o'clock at night. And she was two and a half, three years old. I put her to bed, and I'm watching on this old black and white TV with rabbit ears, Hulk Hogan, WWF wrestling, right? I mean, this is a long time ago. And I could hear her talking in her bedroom. She was talking, just carrying on a conversation. And I thought, I'm just let it go. You know, I'm a single parent now. I don't want to be a hard ass. You know, I'm just going to let her do, because she'll fall asleep. Any minute now, I'm going to fall asleep. So this went on for a little while, about another 15, 20 minutes. And so I finally get out. I got to tell her to go to sleep. And so I walked down the hallway, just peeked around the corner, and there she was sitting on the bed, just sitting there. Her feet wouldn't even touch the floor. I mean, her feet barely made it past the mattress to get to the box spring. And I said, honey, it's time to lay down and go to sleep. And I turned around and I walked back out. I took about two steps. And I turned around and I peeked back in. Because when I looked in there initially, I was fully expecting her to be playing with My Little Pony. I mean, I really was, but she wasn't. And I said, who are you talking to? You know, what is it? And she just looks at me, and with the most matter-of-fact voice, and with her fingers, little plump little fingers pointed at this open closet door that was about as deep as a hangar. You know, it wasn't very deep at all. She points at this closet in the most matter-of-fact way, says, Mommy.
Oh, that gives me goosebumps.
I made Elizabeth Saint cry with that story. So anyway, that's how it all started. I thought, I was mad. I was very angry. I looked so hard to see what she was seeing. I wanted to see her one more time just to say, I love you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Because you didn't have any closure.
Nothing. Nothing. And she wasn't there. And so I think it must have been 3 days later after just chewing at me. I had to figure out what the heck was going on. And I went to the library. I tried to find any information I could on the paranormal or this thing called ghosts, finding ghosts or whatever it was called. I didn't even know how to identify it. You know, I mean, I grew up on a farm, very matter of fact, childhood growing up. Not afraid of the dark, no such thing as ghosts, everything, you know, there's none of that stuff, none of that talk ever. And I was in the military. I was at the 101st Airborne Division. I was a badass. All right. You know, there was nothing could stir me. That night stirred me like you wouldn't believe. I needed to find answers. And so I very selfishly started to try to do investigations. People knew that I was trying to study this thing called the paranormal. And they say, hey, I know this guy or this family that thinks they have a ghost. We know that, you know, I know that you're studying this stuff. Maybe you can go help them out. And so I thought, what an opportunity. This is an opportunity maybe me to see what my daughter sees. So it was very selfish on my part. I was wanting to try to connect. And all of a sudden, after about a period of a year, I realized I was helping people. I mean, I was finding squirrels and raccoons and shorts and wires and foundations that were moving, making doors swing open because I was in construction. I mean, I knew a lot about how the structure buildings worked, especially with cold weather, when it got hot, you know, whatever. And I, you know, being a farm kid, I understood, you know, grease spots where animals would slide under like a spot on your floor or under a wall or whatever. I said, oh, you got a raccoon under here. But I was a tracker. And so I realized I was helping people. And next thing you know, my needs took a back seat to other people's needs.
And I was wondering, with all the investigations you've done and all of the approaches you've taken, the research you've done, did you ever feel like you made a connection with your wife?
Never did.
Oh.
Never did. Never felt like I ever did. You know, and that's when it comes into, you know, navigating the paranormal. Mm-hmm. It was something I wish I would have. I wish it was the first book I wish I would have pulled when I was trying to find out anything about the paranormal, because I probably wouldn't have. And it's not just about the paranormal itself that navigating the paranormal is about. It's about the people that are involved in it. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many narcissists are in this world?
There's a lot.
Oh my God.
I've encountered a lot.
Oh my God. They're scarier than the ghosts.
Yes.
Okay. And so
actually,
that's
you're
a
very
lot of,
right.
Yeah, that and so there's a lot of that going on, and that's a lot about what navigating the paranormal is. It's a book that nobody wants to talk about. They want a book or books on how to hunt ghosts. Okay, fine. On your journey there, what are you going to expect? Nobody ever told you that, did they?
Yeah, because I felt like reading the book, I think it doesn't matter what profession you're in, everyone needs a mentor at some
yes.
point in their life. And that's how this
yes.
book came across to me, is in a
well,
mentor.
You did read the book.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Because
good.
It comes across as like the things that you would want to know from your mentor. And it's like you're writing it in a lot of ways to help those people learn and grow. Things they
exactly.
should watch out for, things they should
and
be aware of.
Exactly. And I don't single anybody out. I don't talk badly really about anybody. You know, everybody has
no.
their own way of doing things, and I embrace that. You know, if you choose to believe in one religion over another, hey, that's fine with me. You know, we all should be able to express who we are without criticism. And I believe I talk about that a lot in there, as well as religion.
And that actually is a question I wanted to ask you, because reading the book, it seems like, I don't know if you're Christian or if you're a man of faith anyway.
Yes, I am Christian.
Okay.
I'm also Native American.
There's some people who can't square those things up, that you can't be interested and believe in the paranormal and be Christian. And you really do a good job in the book of using the Bible and examples from the Bible to kind of support what you believe and things that the Bible tells you to watch out for.
So absolutely.
I find that very interesting because
thank you.
I think that I think a lot of people in the paranormal, other people judge them as they must be into some sort of demonic thing, dark things. And that's not necessarily the case. Look at how you started in it.
Right. You don't know why somebody started. Everybody has their own reasons. Some is just out of curiosity. You know, what's this all about? You know, and then they move on. You know, others have their own agendas, own personal agendas. Some are just power freaks. You know, and I can't verbatim them exactly. You know, I mean, I know my book, but, you know, there's so many topics about, you know, singling out people and how, you know, knowing how to be a good leader, you know, in a team. There's so much. And I think that's actually the first chapter. I think it's just called, My God, There's So Much. Mm-hmm. And there is just so much to this book. I didn't know where to start. And I just started to write. And my publisher said, Alan, every chapter just flowed into the next.
One thing I felt that you make very clear, and I don't think people always take it as seriously as they should, is the dangers involved in paranormal activity and opening yourself up to things. In the book, you make that very clear.
Yes. You've got to understand that you shouldn't, you know, I only investigated a place once. I think I explained that in the book. I only investigated a place once because of this. You know, God is very forgiving and he will protect you maybe one time, but you shouldn't tempt God. You know, I talk about how in the book, I talk about how Jesus and the devil were having their discussion and the devil said, hey, jump off this cliff. You know, your father's going to reach down and protect you before you hit the ground. He's going to send angels down here, pick you up. And he says, you know, I won't tempt my father. He says, you know, I'm not going to do that. It's the same principle with me in the paranormal. And anybody should don't take it lightly. These things are studying you as hard as you're studying them, but they're going to know you faster than you know them. And that's the danger, mm-hmm. because they pick up on all your weaknesses. They know all your little quirks. They know everything about you, and they start pulling those levers. And that starts messing with your life. You are a marionette to them. They are the puppet master. I can't emphasize enough how dangerous the paranormal can be. You've got to have a very grounded, equilibrium is the word. You've got to be very grounded in what you do. If it's any kind of faith. It doesn't matter if it's Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, Navajo. It doesn't matter. As long as you believe in something that you believe is more powerful than what the demonic is, you might be safe. But as soon as you begin to recognize it as being something dangerous, back out, because it's already probably too late.
I just feel like now in a YouTube, TikTok sort of world that we live in, a lot of people see these paranormal TikToks and they're like, that looks like fun. That looks scary. And I could get a lot of views if I do something like that.
Yep.
So they jump into it and not know really what they're doing. And I find that a lot of people provoke things.
They do.
Try to get a reaction. And that just seems extremely dangerous to me.
It is, and they will use those opportunities to find that crack in what I call your so-called armor. Even if you are a little bit religious and you believe a little bit in God and you go in there with good intentions to think that God will protect you, the second that you put God out of your mind for a moment because something remarkable just happened, and that's what they do, they'll make something remarkable happen, they will find their way in. These things will find their way in. and they do it slowly and methodically. You may not notice the effects right away, but you might, and I tell people this all the time, you know, they say, man, my life has just sucked here lately. Really? What do you do? You investigate the paranormal? Yeah. Well, when did your life start really sucking? Did it? Think back. Oh, let me see. Oh, you know what? It was about that time that I investigated Edinburgh Manor or someplace. Really? Huh. Did it start increasing as time went on? So you've been there? Yeah. Okay. You brought something home with you. Mm-hmm. You let it in without even knowing it. You let it in because you talked to it. Well, I didn't use a Ouija board or anything. No. Did you use a millimeter? Yeah. It's electronic Ouija board. No, it's not. Yeah, sure it is. Think about it. Yes, no questions.
Because a lot of times people will start with a question like, who is here? Or does anybody want to talk to me? Very open questions like that.
Yes. And you know what? These things, they're identity thieves. The demonic is an identity thief. When you die, and I'm very grounded in believing this, when you die, you go one or two places, heaven or hell. There's no in-betweens. There's no gray areas. There's no veil. You go to heaven or hell. Strictly my opinion, of course. Anybody can have their opinion, and this is mine. I'm very strong in my opinion. You either go to heaven or hell. I would hate to think that my father or mother is walking around in what in our plane right now, which I refer to hell right now. You know, I mean, everything about our world is just crap. I would hate to think they're stuck here. I would much rather them think they're in heaven. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're not here anymore, but we mourn for them and we mourn for them heavily. We think, oh my gosh, my mom wanted to do this. She wanted to do that. She didn't finish up that tapestry thing. She didn't do her quilt. My Uncle Bob, he didn't get that 69th Chevelle in the garage done. You know, he has so much unfinished business. No, they didn't. They don't even care. They're in heaven now. The people that have unfinished business are the ones left behind. And evil is around us. It's present all the time. It's always here. And it'll say, oh, I bet you anything, I can slip into Uncle Bob's 69 Chevelle from here. I can just have a wrench roll off the bench and somebody say, oh, that's Uncle Bob. And next thing you know, you're talking to Uncle Bob. And you're getting sucked down that rabbit hole, a very dark rabbit hole that has teeth in it. Sharp teeth. And it's going to start chewing on your soul. And the next thing you know, you're going to psychic mediums and you're doing all the things that it says in Leviticus that you shouldn't do. And you're getting even darker. That's what navigating the paranormal is all about. You've gotten how to navigate it because those waters are dark. It's a very dark river.
In the book, you don't go into it in depth, though, but there was a case in Tennessee where you went somewhere and you stayed for seven days.
Oh, my God. Yes. Oh, my God. I was introduced to the Tennessee house through Robert Walczak. Robert Walczak is a very good friend of mine. He lives here in Ankeny, Iowa. He is the creator of Ghost Gear products. He has the Epic Box and Pelican and several different things. You can get them on different platforms now, different ghost shops type things on the internet. But he got a hold of me and said, hey, Alan, he says, these people down in Tennessee, they're rebuilding the house and they're going to turn it into like a duplex type thing. And the guy that's in there is having a lot of problems. In fact, he went crazy one day and the police came and had to tase him and he went nuts. And he was claiming that tools were like skill saws and stuff were turning themselves on. Things were getting thrown around and you know, 2x4s getting thrown at him. And I thought, wow. And he says, you want to go investigate it? And my first thought was, no. I don't want nothing to do with that. You know, I'd already been at the Stagecoach Inn long enough to know that when that sounds pretty dark, you know, and he says, well, what do you think? We'll just try it. And he says, in fact, he says, there's like this Paracon, like Bigfoot, like convention thing going on down there. Maybe you can sell a couple books at the same time. And I thought, well, heck, you know, I mean, Yeah, okay. You know, I had my book In Too Deep at the time, and Conflict really wasn't written yet. And I thought, yeah, I'll go down there. Yeah, let's go. So I did a little research on it, and come to find out that it was a Masonically built house. The Mason, it was a house built by the Masons. Okay. And so that really made it interesting. And so we get down there, and oh my God, the first night we were there, we started getting a lot of activity. I asked Robert to design a tripwire, so to speak. Not like these tripwires like that are all connected together like in a big long string. This was one beam of light that would go from one mirror to another mirror to another mirror and then bounce back to its home base, kind of like in Mission Impossible. You break the beam, it's going to set off the alarms, right? So he developed this just for us to work with. And I got some fantastic footage. I wish I could pull it up on TikTok, but I put music with it. Oh. So it is pretty, and so, you know, Elvis, it doesn't sit right with their protocols. I am going to put it on my website eventually. But anyway, the tripwires got set off. I had a vibration sensor on the staircase, which I use. I got a vibration sensor as my go-to. It's a device that has a magnet in it. You're supposed to be able to put it on like a metal door. Like if your house, you know, has a metal door, you turn it on, you put it on the door. And if somebody would happen to shake the lock a little bit too hard, it would go off. But if it's like windy or something out and little sticks and twigs and stuff hit the door, it doesn't bother it. It doesn't bother at all. It's really benign. You know what I mean? You really have to physically kind of manipulate it, hit it, touch it for it to go off. This thing is going off on this staircase like nobody's business, right on this column that it has all these Masonic temple type, the eye and everything. I mean, it was right there. At first, the tripwire goes off, then a motion sensor goes off, then my MAGD, which is something I built, goes off. MAGD stands for Multiple Apparition Generating Device. It goes, the lights on it has a proximity locator on it. The lights will go off when it detects a static charge. They go off. And then going up the steps, on top of the steps, this vibration sensor goes off. It was nuts. So it got so phenomenally crazy that we were posting this stuff. And you ever heard of Kalani the Ghost Hunter?
Uh-huh.
That's a big... Kalani the Ghost Hunter shows up at the Demon House. And he was the one who coined it, the Tennessee Demon House. I should write a whole book about that week. it was not quite as creepy as Stagecoach, but I wasn't there that long. 7 days was long enough. And figure this out. I tell these people, I said, I spent 7 years at Stagecoach Inn. I spent 7 days at this other creepy place. What does seven have something to do with my life?
Coincidence? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the book will only have seven chapters in it. I don't know. The Tennessee Demon House was definitely one of my real crazy ones. And I've had a lot of crazy ones, but that was the one that was extraordinary. But I've also had basements that were talking, lots of voices in basements. I did a house. It was probably my fifth or sixth year doing this stuff way back. And they said, yeah, Alan, there's people there. We just moved into this house. We don't know it very well, but there's people talking in the basement. And I showed up. We're visiting. And I, you hear that? I go, yeah, yeah. And so I go to the steps and I'm listening. I could hear it. So I go downstairs and it's gone. I don't hear it anymore. So I stand there for like 10 minutes, nothing. So I go back upstairs and we're talking. And within probably 30 minutes, I heard it again. And so did they. Well, this went on for about a quarter of the night. And it must have been about midnight or so. I decided, I'm just going down. I'm gonna sit down there. And there was like an old orange crate or just kind of a crate that was sitting down there in the basement. It was a concrete floor. And I'm sitting there waiting for something to make an appearance to me, you know, something that's going to start talking to me. And I hear the voices again. It was the floor drain. It was dry. The pee trap was dry. And what was happening was every time somebody would flush a toilet or run a sink, all the water would rush out of their house, down their lateral, into the main line, splash down there. And that sound of that water running and splashing would emanate down that big giant pipe, echoing, just reverberating, and then finding its way up the lateral of this person's house into that dry P-trap, coming out of there sounding like voices. I took a coffee can, I filled it up full of that P-trap full of water, and I did an exorcism right then and there.
And took care of it. Well, I got to tell you, I can't tell you how many times my ice machine in my freezer I've been convinced is something paranormal when it's ice dropping. You know, it's not.
Yes. So you've got to step back. You got to take a breath. And I talk about that in the book. You've got to debunk everything. You can't go into every place and think right away it's paranormal.
Were you able to debunk anything at the Tennessee house? Because in the book, you have I guess he's your friend, Father Lopez.
Father Ruben Lopez, yeah.
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 He's
an exorcist.
And it sounds like you've called him in on a number of cases, including the one in Tennessee. Yeah. I think you actually called him on the phone.
Yes, I did. And the more he talked, it was the creepy. I got it all on video. That's the cool thing about my books. I don't write about it or I don't put it in the book if I can't back it up. And everything I ever talk about, I've got video. We knew that there was something really bad going on there. And every time I would mention God, I would get hits on the millimeter and Robert or I would start getting really kind of nauseous feeling. And just we'd start getting angry at each other. And so I thought, I'm gonna call the Father. And so I get him on the phone, told him what was going on. And he said, I don't know how many's there, but you've got a lot. You got a problem. He said, you got a problem. And I was discussing it with him. And I told him about the Masonic thing. And half the block was built by the Masonic temple. I mean, this almost entire city block had Masonic houses on it from the Masonic people that lived in this area. He said, you got a problem there. And so he starts praying in Latin. Right. And I have this one device. It's called the Tower. Robert gave it to me. What it is, basically, it's an EM device. It has a lot of little lights on it. It'll light up like a Christmas tree. And he gave it to me sometime back for doing something for him. He says, you can have this. It only works like half the time. It doesn't work that well. This thing was lighting up like a Christmas tree. Every time Father Ruben Lopez would start praying in Latin, the thing would go off. Millimeters would just start going blank, straight lines. Peeking out to the point where it was just straight lines. Everything was just, it was, I said, Robert, I said, is that normal? He said, no. He said, I don't understand this at all. He said, this shouldn't be doing this. In fact, the first night that we were there, I thought it would be really cool to put Robert in a very vulnerable position. And I put him in the house. I used a GoPro that I could link to my cell phone. And I set out in my Explorer and I was watching Robert on the GoPro. And I also had a microphone that was in my ear that I could hear him talking at the same time over a little speaker that he had. And he was talking and he started saying, I hear dogs barking. I hear dogs barking. And I was outside. And I'm videotaping myself. I had the door open and I had my Canon FX205 has a shotgun microphone on it, pointing at me from the driver's side of the car. So it's actually pointing past me outside the car. There's no dogs barking. I listened to that tape 15 times or that portion of that video, at least 15. I said, and I'm telling the camera, I'm reporting this. There's no dogs barking out here. And he's saying there's dogs barking. He could hear them. And I think, this isn't good. This isn't good at all. He's hearing dogs barking inside that house. I guess it was like 3 minutes later. I watched, there was like a picture window that had a sheer curtain on it that was on the first floor. There was a little bit of light down there. Not a lot, but enough that I seen a shadow move across that sheer curtain. And I said, damn it, there's a sheer curtain. And so I ran inside. I said, Robert, I'm coming in. You can hear, we made a film. We basically made a documentary. I put it all together on you. It's on YouTube. It's called I forget what the YouTube page is called now. I think it's Dark Gear. Dark Gear, I think, is the name of the YouTube page. I don't go to it very often. But the entire investigation's there of all the stuff that went on. And he said, I come inside. I said, dude, I said, there was a shadow that walked across. I said, there's no dogs barking outside. He said, no, I said, I'm hearing dogs barking. I said, I was hearing something downstairs, and it was only a couple moments before I seen this shadow walk across the sheared curtain just down below him. He was sitting on the staircase, on the same staircase that this vibration sensor I was referred to earlier was going off. So, yeah, it was quite the investigation. It was crazy.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Alan Cornelison about his book, Navigating the Paranormal. Get more information at alanlobo.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
Raise your hand if you want your nails to look perfect all the time. Me too. I'm Sarah Gibson Tuttle from Olive & June, and this is exactly why we created the Manny System. We wanted to make it possible for everyone everywhere to give themselves a beautiful manicure at home. With our tools and our long-lasting polish, each manicure with our Manny system comes out to just $2. That's right, $2. No more $30, $40, $50 Mannies that you get at a salon and they take hours. Now you can paint your nails on your time and love them more than ever. And by the way, when people ask, who did your nails? Where did you get them done? You're going to proudly say, I did them myself. Get 20% off your first Manny system with code DIYNAIL20 at oliveandjune.com/DIYNAIL20. That's code DIYNAIL20 for 20% off at oliveandjune.com/DIYNAIL20.